Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at the Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at the Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please. And find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio. Starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
Pop Life Podcast today is, yo, August 1st. It's crazy, dude. Summer's, what, it's two-thirds down.
Yeah, it's 4 months until 2018, which is insane.
That's two-thirds down. So, like, this month, August, whatever you're trying to do this summer, if you ain't doing it yet, you best get to cracking. Because you ain't got much time left before.
Crazy.
It's Labor Day, then it's football season, then it's... What you say?
So you get some rainy days, nigga. It's
Yeah, because it ain't guaranteed that every day in August going to be sunny.
Ain't no makeups.
Ain't no makeups. When you know it's Thanksgiving and you in the supermarket buying chicken and extra cheese for the mac and cheese.
Cranberry sauce.
Word. How's everybody doing though?
Good.
I'm good. Speaking of rainy days, we had one of those here today. Today was one of those days where it wanted to rain, then stop, then rain, then stop, then rain a little bit, then pour, then stop. I was like, literally trying to run through the storm to get somewhere because I didn't know it was supposed to rain today.
Did it cool off? Is it like
a little bit? No, it cooled things down a little bit.
Okay, so. Well, you know, that's something in New York City, man. Hopefully by this weekend it'll be popping.
Basically. You know? Basically.
How was your vacation, bro?
Vacation was good. It was definitely well-rested. Did some excursions, not a lot. Really want to give a shout-out to my nephew Christian.
Wait, Sean, you low.
Yeah, turn your volume up, bro.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, much better. There you go.
Okay. Yeah, I want to give a shout out to Justin and my nephew Christian.
Okay.
Who ended up getting hustled on the jet ski scam. God bless him. You know, the guy, you know, he let them go out there. They out there way out. They doing it. They having a ball.
Popping.
Like, it was like, yo, I looked up and I was just like, yo, did y'all work out what's the payment situation? Cause they've been out there for a while. So needless to say, they was dead on the jet skis the rest of the trip.
Yeah. Well, how much did it run you?
A lot. Enough
where they ain't getting no more rides.
Nothing, B. I was like, y'all get nothing. Yeah, man. It was, you know, I mean, look, they got God, you know, they're kids, you know, what happened?
You know,
the guys, of course, I'm like, dude, of course the guy's not going to tell you your time is up. You know, he knows he's going to get his money, right? Like, he knows he's going to get his money here. He's not on some random beach. You know what I'm saying? So.
Yeah, stay cool. As long as you want. Yeah.
We had a really good time. It was a great vacation. Lot of family. Mostly Mona's side. But we really had a good time and, it was just stress free, you know, one of those vacations where not a lot of excursions. So we had a couple days where we literally just lounged around and just chill, slept and got up.
I hate being on a vacation and then like you like go like nonstop. Yeah. I'm like, come on, man. I ain't come here for that. I got to stay home for the rat race, you know?
Exactly. You know? So it was really good. I love it. But I definitely need Jamaica to do a little better. We're upgrading that Montego Bay Airport, dude. Like, it's a bit of a zoo still. Nah, it's not raggedy, but it's still a bit of a zoo. Listen, it was a half hour of madness, and I had a great vacation. It's not that big a deal.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, just since we're doing like the summer shout outs, I just wanted to say peace to all the cats in Harlem that ride the ATVs and the dirt bikes. and make mad noise.
I'm sick of them. I'm sick of them. Like, when you want to talk about...
I sound like a gentrifier right now. That's what I'm about to say.
When the gentrifiers want to make complaints, don't complain about Mr. Softy. Complain about them niggas.
Because they just
be loud for no fucking reason. Like, all in front of your house. Just burning out. Just doing donuts. Just fucking burning the back wheel out. They want to hear the noise. And it's the most annoying shit. Oh my God, I hate them so much.
And the cops do nothing because they can't catch them because those guys will like drive the wrong way. So the cops is basically like, they just made a peace with it. Like, hey man, we ain't chasing these dudes. We ain't gonna catch them anyway. And if we was to catch one of them, knock somebody off their bike, it's gonna be a mess. So we just eat it, you know. So they just free to reign. And then peace to the cats. I guess they're more Dominican cats, but peace to the Dominican cats on the jet skis in Manhattan, who are basically like those guys but on the water. Because they go all up and down the Hudson. Yeah, the La Marina.
I don't understand jet skiing in the Hudson. It's disgusting.
Yo, them cats the Hudson, out there all day.
The Hudson is not Miami Bay. It's a disgusting body of water. Like, you fall into that shit, you get sprayed with that shit. Like, I just feel like it's going to eat your skin up.
Yeah.
Like, it's so nasty.
It's a bunch of them jet ski dudes. It ain't just like a couple. It's like 12, 15 of them cats. And they just be like up on a Saturday or Sunday. If that weather's nice, they are up and down that Hudson River like nonstop. It's crazy.
There's no way. You couldn't pay me.
Yeah. That's insane. So. But you know, summer in New York, man. What are you going to do, man?
Listen, no place like it. No fucking place like it.
It's definitely not. Let's get into a little bit of TV and just pop culture. Well, before we get too deep in it,
because I don't know if this is really like a full topic, let's just give a shout out real quick to Auntie Maxine Waters.
Oh, yes.
For reclaiming her time. Yes. She had to pull out the Robert Rules of Order on motherfuckers.
I've been here a long time. I know how this shit works.
Let me tell you how this works. So basically what happens is that when you're in a Senate hearing, or a House hearing, I guess each person who's asking questions has a limited amount of time to address the person, who's, you know, being questioned or whatever. And Maxine Waters was basically asking a straightforward question, which was, we sent you a letter asking for, you know, some paperwork. You didn't provide it. Why? You didn't answer it. Why not? And your man is all, who was it? It was Trump's director. Secretary of Finance.
Steve Mnuchin.
Yeah, he's the Secretary of Finance, right? Or something like that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So basically she's like, yo, we sent you this letter. Me and my people sent you this letter. You ain't answer it. Why not? And he's like, well, first of all, let me just say thank you for your work and your this. And then you hear Maxine Waters like, reclaiming my time. The chair is like ceding the floor back to Representative Waters. She's like, okay, thank you for telling me about me. I don't want to spend my time telling me about me. I know it's me. Why, you know, can you answer my question? He's like, well, I was about to answer it if you had let me talk. She's like, reclaiming my time. So basically this went on for a minute because every time mm-hmm. she was like, answer the question, he went in some roundabout way. Well, I was going to, if you had let me, what I was going to say, first of all, let me start by, and she was like, reclaim my time. Basically, she was like, listen, nigga, what you're not going to do is run this clock down because that's what that was. He was trying to run the clock down. And she was like, that's what you're not going to do. And I have the ability to reclaim the floor and reclaim the time that you're trying to run out. So, of course, mm-hmm. we as black people then turned it into a gospel song.
That dude is a gospel song, killed it.
It is like a real gospel song, like for real. Like you can sing that.
Like they might be singing that Sunday.
Yeah, like I'm sure somebody's pastor did a sermon because you could do a sermon on it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
The memes is there, like everything. So, you know, if nothing else came out of this Trump administration, the propelling of Maxine Waters to the forefront was much needed. She is the hero that we needed at this time. And what the world learned is that what you're not going to do is anything but answer a question a black grandma asks you.
And respect it.
Like, there's no way you think you're going to get around answering a question from a black grandma. Like, if she could have, she probably would have physically yanked his ass up. Because that's what she would have done to one of us. You know what I mean? So it's like, that's what you're not going to do. So, yeah.
I mean, she's amazing, too, because, like, because she's, I think she's almost 80. She's like 78, 79, and like obviously like spry and sharp and like on point, and like she looks like for her age, you know, she's she's like, man, she like she looks like she's gonna go another 30 years, man. She's
and I'm friends with her grandson. I won't say who he is, but he's in the business. And
oh, is he?
Yeah, okay. And I'll tell y'all offline, but I'm friends with her grandson, so every time something comes up, like, I was at Essence Fest, and I was like, yo, your grandma out here, like, at Essence Fest doing panels, and I was like, but I'm like, it's crazy, like, your grandmother is a meme, like, how does that feel? You know what I'm saying? It's just kind of...
What'd he say?
He was like, nah, it's crazy. Like, I'm sure he's extremely proud of her, but it's funny, because he had told me things about her before, because they're just, like, a way he does business sometimes. And without calling her by name, I just happened to know who she was. He was like, well, you know, I got my start working for my grandmother. And, you know, somebody once tried to throw me under the bus for something. And I was like, come on, grandma, you know, I wouldn't do that. And she was like, do I? You know what I mean? And like, this, like, you know, but it's, so, you know, it just taught him to be equally skeptical, equally objective, like, no matter who it was, you know? So, yeah.
You have to be on point.
Right.
Wow. Yeah. Well, we love her. I wanted to speak about, you know, a couple of the summer TV shows have actually been pretty good. Tonight, obviously, we're taping, on a Wednesday, so we're not, watching it, but tonight is the mid-season finale of Queen Sugar. So, we'll be discussing that, next week. It's a lot of moving parts. Like, I can't wait to see how they wrap it up. I don't know if it's 1 hour or 2 hours tonight, but, yeah, I can't wait to see that. But we also had Power, which last week was just like banana. Did you see it last week, bro? Did you see it while you was away?
Well, I couldn't see it while I was away. I basically, we had cable, but we didn't have premium, and a lot of those channels aren't really there in Jamaica. So I basically watched Netflix and like the ID channel for like a week. But yeah, I mean, I'm caught up. I mean,
oh, you didn't catch up when you got, okay.
Yeah, I caught up when I got home.
Okay. So, I mean, you know, it's just, Power's just like, this show's crazy, man. Like, the murder, the level, like last season, the level of sex was like insane. Everybody was naked all the time. Still think there might have been some actual fucking going on. Like, everybody got nude last season. This season, it's been very minimal sex. It's been, but the level of violence this season has been off the charts. Like, Charlie Murphy's character got killed with like, with a 45 pound weight smack, crushing his skull like a fucking watermelon. And like, you know, and, this week, who got killed? Tommy beat this cat in the head with a baseball bat, and somebody cut this, Julio, this guy, Julio's neck, cut a tattoo off his neck. Like, it was craziness, man. Like, you know, so I guess they've decided to ratchet up the violence this season as opposed to the sex. Storylines don't really make sense. There's a ton of holes. There's a lot of dead characters now.
But
I don't know where we're
going
to go.
Don't really seem to care about the plot.
No, they absolutely don't. It's, you know what? This thing is, I'm gonna keep watching too. But this thing is basically like a very violent version of the haves and the have-nots. It's soap opera, kind of. You know, it's a violent soap opera, and the plot holes and shit don't really matter to people. They just want to see it. You know, they have something to talk about in the barbershop and the beauty parlor.
The plot holes in the initial seasons were very minimal, and you actually felt like you were kind of nitpicking a little bit with the plot holes.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay, I mean, it's TV, da 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 da. But now it's comically bad. Like, it's really, really bad. And it feels rushed. It doesn't feel like thought out writing. It feels like we need to, it almost feels like they, you know, were in this and then like season, they got picked up for season three and nobody really knew what the fuck to do.
It was like, oh shit,
we got to really actually write a whole nother season. I don't think they were mentally prepared for, at least that's what it feels like. Yeah. I mean, the beauty of Power is that it's shot well. Like, it's a beautiful, they're attractive people. It's beautifully shot. It looks like a video. It, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's dope in that sense. But yeah, man, I mean, when you really start to watch the show, it's kind of just comically bad. Like this dude, Ghost is in a federal lockup. He's a high value prisoner. He's in there for murdering a federal officer.
Yep.
Like, so he's in the weight room. There's no cameras in the weight room.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Like there's no, like.
And then he kills the guard who was played by Charlie Murphy by, again, smashing his head in like a fucking watermelon with a weight. And then like blood all over him, him and a couple of the guys, and they kill another guy too. Then him and this guy walk out and they never show like people discovering the guard, the prison going
nothing,
on lockdown.
Nothing.
Trying to figure out what happened. Next thing you know, he's just home wearing a suit. Like what?
Dude, like movie time, it might have been about 15 minutes. In the actual time delay, it was about 36 hours. Within 36 yeah. hours, he kills a federal prison guard by caving his head in. Like, he's an accessory to a next murder inside the same building. Comes home. Commits another murder, what is happening? And I'm saying to myself, dude, you basically just walked out of the federal penitentiary. There was no sense of maybe they're following me.
Watching me.
Nothing. It was just like, I understand that there are constraints on television because it's an hour. And so you kind of have to do some things where not everything is sort of blatant and explained, and there needs to be some level of understanding that it's television. But it was just like, okay, guys, this is just comically bad now. And yeah, most people are watching this because it's entertaining, not because it's good. And that it's become a bit of a thing to watch on the timeline, right?
Like, yeah, just exactly.
Sort of, you know, it's social commentary, not that it's great television.
Exactly. It's like, oh, let me watch this because everybody is going to be. But even the timeline shit is weird now because, you know, they put the show on Sunday mornings on if you watch online. So there's people like myself who watch it Sunday mornings to Sunday night. I'm trying to watch Insecure and some other stuff. And it's time conflict.
Because now that Game of Thrones is back, it's in direct conflict
Exactly. That. People watch that too. But then people get on there and watch it Sunday morning and then they give it spoilers all day. It's like, yo, my nigga, like, you know, like, some people don't watch it till Sunday night. Like, why are you like telling all the plot lines Sunday morning at 10:30? Like, come on, B. Like, it's kind of wild. And then this week 50 was mad because apparently the show that we're talking about with all the stuff happening in an hour apparently was supposed to have been two separate episodes, and Stars wouldn't give them money to shoot additional episodes. So they basically had to cram two episodes together within a 1 hour time frame, which is why it was so much happening and nothing was really making sense. That's according to the Stars people. I'm just saying what they're saying. So 50, of course, gets online and threatens to take the show from the network and he's going to move it somewhere else and he's not fucking with Stars. And it turned into a whole thing, you know?
Yeah. I'm not into their deal. I don't know that that's possible.
Yeah, I don't think.
I think he may be wanting to leave the show, and I do say, and I do feel like he was a bit of a driving force initially, but I don't necessarily know that people are tuning in 450. What I'm saying? Like, there may be a drop off.
His character definitely like wild is welcome.
Yeah,
so yeah, so that's that. Insecure. Another timeline explosion. This week.
This week wasn't as bad as the premiere.
I'm gonna say I think it was nine. I'm gonna say then we skipping around. Let me say this. Because when Lawrence went back to Tasha's crib and she took him back, that seemed to spark a lot of debate about her being a bird and why she shouldn't have took him back, and you know.
Oh, see, I didn't see that much.
Lawrence being a sucker for going back and he don't know what he born and da 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 da, you know, I enjoyed Insecure a lot. Like, I enjoyed this episode as well. What'd you think about it?
Well, it's the same thing I said last week. Neither one of them niggas know what they want. I will say one interesting thing that I saw, this dude posted, a screen grab of Lawrence's boy that he's been staying with.
Oh, the light-skinned dude. He's
yeah, hilarious. and was like, this is a true friend. And I was like, nah, Dick was on the table. Like, he, in my opinion, that whole conversation, because he was like, yo, he was stalling Issa out like the feds. And I was like, nah, he was trying to feel Issa out because that nigga is a savage. And I really believe,
oh, you think,
like,
he would have fucked if he could have?
Oh, absolutely. That whole, when he went to, you didn't hear him. The first thing he said when he saw Lawrence was like, yo, does she always look like that? Like, and he's like, yo, what she been putting in your head? That made him tell on your edges. And I also think that he would not have brought Lawrence up if she hadn't brought him up, which some people saw as stalling. We already know from his character that he fucks around.
Yeah.
He said he's only married. I forget. He gave some really shallow reason as to why he's married.
Because he's getting older or some dumb shit.
Yeah. Like, I believe Dick was on the table. I don't believe he was going to flat out be like, so what's up? But I believe that depending on how that conversation would have went, and I believe he would have blazed. Yeah, and I believe he would have gone to Lawrence like, nigga, I'm doing you a favor. You ain't even trying to go back. Like, she ain't shit. I'm proving to you that she ain't shit. I could see that happening because he seems like that dude to me.
Interesting theory. I hadn't thought about that, but okay. I could see that.
Yeah, he seems like that dude to me, right?
Yeah.
Especially with Locke, like I said, what locked it in for me was when he saw Lawrence. He was like, yo, she always looked like that. You know what I mean? Yeah. It was like, you know, whatever. The Lawrence and Tasha thing, I mean.
So like I was waiting for this day. Today.
Don't get ahead of yourself though. Let's wait for another season, another episode to play out, because you about to be like, they in a relationship. We don't know. Jeffrey. He apologized to her. She said, are you hungry? Wait for this shit to play out. Because here's what I know. It's like we said last week. Tasha is playing by her rules. Lawrence is on paper a good man because he has no kids. He has a good job. He's got an education. He doesn't have drama. He's not violent. He ain't got a record. Mm-hmm. And he probably has a credit score above 650. That's about all y'all need. They need, you know what I'm saying? It's like, they like, girl, that's a good, what you talking about? That's a good
one. Well, shit, what else do you need?
You need a nigga that you're compatible with some drive, with like, who's
interested. Well, he's doing all right, and they seem compatible. They watch the slave show together.
And he was paying zero attention. I mean, I'm just saying, here's what I know. I know that next week he's going to be around Tasha's family.
I cannot wait.
And that is going to be some shit. So let's see how that goes. I cannot
wait to see that.
Because to me, in my opinion, here's what I think is going to happen. Like I said before, I don't necessarily even want Lawrence and Issa to get back together. Both these niggas need to be by themselves for a little while. Honestly, they were in a relationship for 5 years. They're each 30 years old. Like, be grown and single by yourself for a minute.
Yeah.
And Issa gonna try to do her whole phase. She ain't built for it at all. I don't think Lawrence is built for hoeing either. I think, like I said before, Lawrence is about comfort. Lawrence is that dude who, if he does get into another relationship, it'll just be because he's comfortable in a relationship. It won't be because he wants Tasha. It'll just be because of, like, you saw how he was on the fence about even, like, he saw the apartment, and even then he was like, like, it took him a minute to even commit to that shit. You know what I mean? I have the feeling that he doesn't like change, like, at all. And I think this is hard for him. And I think I still contend that, like, he apologized because that's what he does. He's that dude. He doesn't like guilt. He's not a bad guy. And I think that's the conversation. Like, I was having this conversation with Kels. It's not that I don't think Lawrence is a bad guy, but he's not
an actively. Kels hates Lawrence.
Well, and here's the thing. I won't even say I hate him. I just think they all.
No, not you, but she does.
Yeah, but I know she does. It's not that Lawrence is a bad guy. No, it's not that Lawrence is a good guy. He's just not a bad guy. I think there's two different things. But
so explain that. Break that down.
So Lawrence, it's not so much that Lawrence has these shining qualities as a person and as a boyfriend. And as a man, not that we've seen exhibited, we've seen nothing extraordinary of Lawrence at all. Like, this episode was the first episode where I saw him actually act like a grown up through the whole shit. The thing is though, like I said, he's not actively a bad guy. He's not malicious. He's not out here just doing shit. But the kind of guy he is, and I know men like this in real life, is that, like I said, because on paper he seems good, and because it's important to him to be that good dude, he ends up hurting people inadvertently because he's lazy and because he's a coward. So like, he like forgetting Issa's birthday and then fucking going to fucking Rite Aid to get her birthday shit, or like just not taking a job for whatever reason, not getting an apartment for whatever reason, or like falling into shit with Tasha and it taking his boy to bring to his attention, like, you don't even take this bitch outside. You know what I mean? Like that type of shit. And my guess is that he's agreeing to come to her cookout, because when she first brought it up, you was trying to see on his face. Yeah, my guess is that he's agreeing to go to this cookout right now because he's feeling guilty about what he did. You know what I mean? So it's like, so, you know, he apologized to her because he's feeling guilty, but I will give him credit for like actually telling her the truth. You know what I mean? But I'm almost compelled to think that he's driven by guilt more than he's driven by however he feels about her per se. But he's that dude that like, or like even the shit with Issa, he owes Issa a conversation about what happened at her house. And he texting her, deleting. So like, even though Issa cheated on him, he's now transferring energy and he's fucking her head up and not addressing it. You know what I mean? So they're both guilty of the same dumb shit. But that's the dude he is. So it's like, it's not like he's actively a bad dude. It's not like he's, again, an abuser or a serial cheater or just a straight fuck nigga. But he's not fully a stand-up man yet. And by default, he ends up hurting people just because he doesn't like to take responsibility for shit. That's my take on it.
And you think he's going to end up hurting Tasha?
I will say this. After the last episode, I think Tasha might actually
hurt him.
Not hurt him, but I think she might see the bullshit coming. I didn't think it before, but when she was like, I think you need to leave, I was like, okay, Tasha. But then when she was like, no, I get it, shit happens, I was like, bitch, oh no, here we go. You know what I mean? So it's like,
but let me, okay. I know, bro don't watch the show, so I don't want to, you know, stick too long on it, because you can't really jump in, but again, we don't have to rehash the whole issue, although one thing I will say, I really am enjoying the Molly, job, you know, lack of pay thing, right. Storyline. I'm enjoying that a lot. And I'm also really
and enjoying. Shout out to Black Women's Equal Pay Day. It's a very timely storyline.
And I'm also enjoying the, Issa and I forget her friend's name, working at the school. Now we've got a Black guy who basically is a coon, basically a racist against Mexicans as the principal. But again, I don't want to rehash the whole show, but I just think the Tasha thing, and I'm not speaking to you specifically, but in watching the timeline, I really am so intrigued and interested by this Tasha thing, because there's so much venom that comes at her. And at the end of the show last week, I tweeted, like, out waiting for y'all, all you girls, to talk about how Tasha's whack. Like, so many girls didn't do what she did, which is like, yeah, the nigga shitted on her and she took him back anyway because she has feelings for her. So like, I just feel like Tasha is actually a very, very interestingly written character, because she, to me, is more reflection of girls, of Black girls anyway, than they are comfortable seeing. Like,
you know,
they're
what?
Seeing themselves. I think a lot of Black women are seeing like huge parts of themselves in that character, and they don't like it.
That's not what's happening.
They rather see Issa and Molly because, you know, Issa's like, you know, funny and goofy, and Molly's obviously like a professional. She's fly, even though they have their major flaws. But Tasha's like that regular, around the way girl who, honestly, up to now, and, you know, I know, you correct me if I'm wrong, like, I have to tell you not to do that anyway, but I haven't seen a ton of flaws in her. Like, she's just a person who...
But, Jeffrey,
let me interrupt you. Let go.
So,
where you are? You still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
So here's some insight. So there's two things I'm going to say. The first thing I'm going to say is that one person, Basie Ipke, on the timeline, I think articulated something very well. For some women, the reason they don't like Tasha has nothing to do with Tasha. The reason they don't like Tasha is because the story that we're interested in is Issa and Lawrence, and Tasha interrupts that story. And I was like, that's a good way to explain it. So that's one thing. So it's kind of like, shit, Tasha, move, get out of the way. So that's some people. some other people don't like Tasha, and actually the show backed this up this last episode. Their homegirls are standing around. They pull up Tasha's Instagram. Homegirl says, oh, she looked like she working at the pyramid tonight. Tasha and Tasha's whole timeline is selfies, duck lips, cute poses. Her Facebook is a fucking memes like, make getting money your revenge. Like, she's that girl. Yeah. You know what I mean? And,
okay.
And
what's wrong with that girl?
Wait, Insecure is supposed to be the intelligent woman's show. Like, we're supposed to identify with Issa and Molly. And Issa and Molly do dumb shit. But Insecure, honestly, think about the makeup of the characters of the show. Insecure is not geared towards women like Tasha. It's geared towards women like Issa's friends. And it kind of made me feel away, because I was like, is Issa purposely setting up
discriminating on the runaway girls? Of course she's purposely doing it. Of course.
Right, but Issa, I think Issa is smart enough that Tasha's gonna pull a win out, because that's too easy to do, right? So, because I don't think Issa would ever just set her up as a foil against Issa and have her take a complete L, because there would be because that's just unfair to any type of woman like that. And I think Issa's smarter than that. So that's what tells me that at some point in this, we're going to expect one thing of Tasha, and Tasha's going to pull out a win. I don't know what that win is going to be. It's probably going to be actually kicking Lawrence to the curb before Lawrence can kick her to the curb. But something tells me that Tasha's going to pull out a win, because I think that Issa's too smart to set up this obvious contrast and have it go the way we want it to go. But that being said, this show is about the Mollies and the Issas and the Amanda Sals and all of those, like the bougie broads or the hood broads who became bougie broads. So like, you know, the Molly / Tony Childs type shit, who maybe make the same choices Tasha does, but don't do it with a lower back tattoo and, you know, Rihanna fucking Puma furry flip flops on. And,
like,
you know, and
flip-flops.
I know you do, Sean, but you also like crazy girls, and you like girls who might cuss you out in the middle of a parking lot. And
no, I'm like real people. Now, come on now. You're not going to sit here and talk about my Tasha like
this. You said you want to know where it's coming from. I'm trying to explain to you where it's coming from. Like, we're set up to relate to them. Like, her audience relates to those girls. Her audience is not the Tasha's. I'm sure they watch, but that's not who Issa Rae's audience has ever been. You know what I mean? So it's like, that's the thing. This is like, and I'm not saying that Tasha is not meant to be a smart woman, but like, but they have her at community college for a reason. You know what I mean? Like, she's set up to be a foil. Like, she's set up to be a foil. She's set up to be the opposite of Issa, where Issa has a short natural, she has a long lace front. You know, like, where Issa is, like, scrapping by working in education, you know, Tasha working at the bank, and she's trying to do this, that, and other, you know what I mean? So it's like, and I mean, even Tasha's apartment, like, it was so funny to me, like, she got the leather sectional, she got the whatever, like, it was, it's so stereotypical. The only thing to me that was out of place is that I was like, hey, Tasha, her socials would have been private. Like, there's no way you would have been able to just scroll her page. You know what I mean? So it's like, But that's where it comes from. So part of it is just people want Tasha to move out the way because they want to be able to see the Lawrence and Issa storyline move forward. And I know one girl just said that. She was like, I don't like Tasha. And she was like, there's no reason for me to like Tasha. I just don't like Tasha. But it's because the show is written for us to not like Tasha. Like, that's the point. But it's written for the men to root for Tasha, I think. The ones who are rooting for Lawrence. There's this whole Tasha appreciation shit happening.
Yeah, because Tasha's holding Lawrence down. She cooking.
But he don't deserve it.
I'm not saying Lawrence deserves anything.
Right.
I'm saying, but Tasha's, to me, Tasha's a good, from what we've seen, it's weird because these are not even real people, but the Tasha character is a good person. Like, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, she's known in the hood and all that, but like, she's a good person. Like, she's, you know, she got her little crib, she got her little gig, she ain't bothering nobody, you know? She's giving us a good pussy, and she cooking, and she's a good person. Like, I don't get the venom. I just don't get it.
I understand your explanation,
but I still, your explanation, although, and I'm sure, although I believe it's very valid, it still doesn't make sense to me. Even though I understand what you're saying, I'm still just like, really? Like, but you know, whatever. We'll debate this.
But also, rooting for Tasha means rooting against Issa, and Issa's the fucking main character in the show, so of course not.
Yeah, well, you know.
I'm saying.
I get it. And I know. I don't think Tasha is going to be on the show after this season. I think that character probably will be going after this season. Whatever happens, I don't think she's going to be here for like season 3, 4, and 5. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think it's, whatever's going to happen is going to culminate this year. But I'm rooting for her to have a good outcome, whatever the situation is. That's all I'm saying. You know, I don't know. We all leave Tasha alone. Shit. Bobby Valentino. So, bro, you know about
this? Be careful.
Yeah.
You wanna set this off? You want me to jump on?
I think Nas like, Sean, please take this one for now.
Yeah, everybody. I just want everybody to be careful right now.
So there was Bobby Valentino, who actually was in a very good group. I really liked Mr.
His first solo album was great. Like his first solo album was Slow Down and all that. That album was dope.
Yeah, I actually think Bobby's pretty talented. Mm-hmm. But you know, he's you know, not necessarily in the spotlight too heavily now for his music. So recently there was a video that allegedly is him. He has reportedly, since that video being released, said that it was not him in the video. And apparently this was a sex worker, and the sex worker, and I'm not, you know, forgive me if I use the wrong terminology, was a transgender sex worker.
A transgender woman.
The video is clearly showing a man who appears to be and is said to be Bobby Valentino.
With no pants on.
With no pants on, sort of being chased out.
We're trousers at, boy.
Yeah, basically being chased out of this woman's apartment and did not pay for services rendered. This person, who is allegedly Bobby Valentino, runs out of the, you know, basically like steers out of there. He's blocking the camera. He throws on some pants. He actually leaves his shoes, his keys. Like, he is literally hightailing his ass out of this place. And it was uploaded to social media. And of course, it caught wildfire. With that said, it was a little surreal to watch.
It was a little surreal to watch.
I was a little uncomfortable with the fact that this person was exposing a man who clearly did not want to be on camera. I'm not quite sure what the dispute was about. I've heard it was about like $25 or something.
Yeah, apparently Bobby didn't pay his tab up when he finished handling his business.
$25 though? Money? Well, I didn't know. Well, I know, never knew how much
Twitter,
it was.
You know, Twitter could be very extreme. Right, it could be super hyperbolic about something. Right. So it may have been as little as $25.
He said Bobby found it on like a version of Backpage or something.
Yeah, I believe that.
I mean, and you know what? I mean, listen, I'm uncomfortable watching anyone sort of be exposed in a way that they shouldn't. I feel like if this, whoever is in that video, should not
allegedly
have,
Bobby Valentino.
Yes, that person should not have been exposed in a way, because what was very weird was that this wasn't a person, I didn't think the person who was taping was trying to expose him as someone who didn't pay their tab. I felt like that person.
They wanted to sell the footage.
They wanted to, but they also wanted to shame him.
Well, they did, but she posted a comment that was like, "Since Bobby want to play with my pockets, I'm either going to get it by extortion or by some other way." So I think she took the video She was like, either pay me or I'm going to sell this to the blogs. And then probably got some little $100 something or yeah. feels like after posting it, some come up is going to come out of it, because she did a Facebook Live the next day and she was all like, I woke up and my mentions were just out of control. Life is just taking me by storm, but I'm so good, y'all. And that, I don't fuck with that. I don't agree with that at
all. Well, I think that, but that's my point, right? Like, I think that this was, listen, you pay your tab, this isn't a thing.
Exactly. Right?
This isn't a thing.
Pay your bill, bro.
this isn't a thing. And to be perfectly honest, even if you didn't finish, even if you did not, even if services were not rendered, right? Dump your pockets and leave out of there with this being a cool moment, right? Like, yeah. Okay, we just going to be smooth about this, right? But this person, and I can, there was a tone to it. There was very much a tone of exposure. There was very much a tone of this person looking for and wanting to expose him in a shameful way, almost like you front like you do X, Y, and Z, but what you really like to do is this, right? Like, I mean, we can, I want to be careful here and I want to tread light, but there's still a stigma against, you know, men who sleep with women who were men, right? That's a stigma. Like, I don't want to, like, let's be fair about this. Like, let's right. not pretend that this isn't a thing.
And you're perpetuating that by exposing a man for that. Like,
exactly.
Right, right.
It's his choice to do whatever he wants to. I really could care less. It's like, who you fuck with is really of no consequence to me. Yep. And that's what, it's also his choice to want to be secretive, right? Like, because to me, there's also, like, now my understanding, and I don't have personal experience with sex workers, but I know people who have been, like, I was always of the understanding that you got your money up front. I've never known a real live
That's
hooker.
That's how I thought it worked.
A real live hooker.
Put your shit on the table, nigga.
Yeah, like, nigga, where's my bread? Like, yeah. First off. And then,
I ain't taking no titties out until the money's on the table.
Basically. And there's a sense of secrecy to that world. And it just felt like it was just exposed. And it was just, it was weird. It was uncomfortable. I didn't like it. I felt like people, I felt like it was a very weird, sort of perfect storm of things that had been happening recently around trans people and comments that have been made and violence to them, right? I'm not gonna pretend like that shit ain't real either. But I felt like because of that storm, people did not actively, you know, get at this person for doing something that was pretty terrible.
So let me ask this question. Now that Bobby allegedly, I want to put that in there, has been exposed, pardon the pun, for liking transgender people to have sexual intercourse with or sexual dalliances with. I don't know what they're doing exactly. Nobody does. Should he have just come clean with it? Or is that?
No. It's not his. He can come out whenever he wants to come out. Bobby V. Go ahead.
What you going to do?
Well, Sean and I are saying no for two different reasons. I'm saying no because here's the thing. You can still barely come out as gay in black entertainment. Especially black music, especially black R&B, right? There's still people out there who will try to tell you that you gay if you even listen to Frank Ocean. But I think there's still, and we talked about this before, there's still a stigma with transsexuals and a discomfort with transsexuals that is even a bigger thing than just homosexuality. And I'm not even going to pretend to understand sexuality in terms of transsexuals, because someone was arguing, like, we're going to get into Janet Mock, but let's say, for instance, Janet Mock transitioned at 18. She's lived more of her life as a woman than she did as a man at this point. And she's gorgeous. She's gorgeous. There's nothing about her that would ever suggest that she was ever, that she was born a different gender. And she's married. And people are like, if you like a transsexual, I guess especially a post-op transsexual, if you're attracted to a transsexual, that doesn't make you gay, because a transsexual presents as a different sex. So a transsexual presents as a woman, you're attracted to a woman, you know, and I guess there's also, I mean, I guess there's, you know, really fine lines and complications with pre-op versus post-op, et cetera. But there is still this stigma about being attracted to somebody and then later finding out that this person was born a different sex, which in your mind means they are a different sex. And that was a lot of the conversation I was having. I was seeing was, why are you calling her a her? That's a dude. That's a this, that's a that. And I don't really approve of that language either, because these are people who take great risk and often great cost in living their lives, you know, as the gender they connect themselves to. So I think it's really dismissive to be like, nah, you were born a man, I'm going to say this. But to that point, that's also what made it such a problem that this woman did this to Bobby, because you know how dangerous it is already out there for the transsexual community and for the sex worker community. So you're actually...
Oh, by exposing them,
you're actually furthering that, because you know it's going to embarrass Bobby. It's gonna stigmatize Bobby to put it out there that he has sex with transsexuals.
And so it also may be endangering other trans people who are sex workers, who are having sexual relationships with people who are torn and still trying to sort of figure this out. And let me just say this, like, I'm not a Neanderthal. This is still very new as especially as being a part of social media, and you're starting to see things and you're exposed to things, and the world has gotten a lot smaller. And we may not necessarily know all of the terminologies. So I definitely want to just say that, you know, because I don't know, is it a her, is it a him, you know, I'm unclear on what that means and how that says, if that, you know, so I just want to be clear in just saying that.
Right.
I'm still learning this. Like, this is still a bit of a
process. I think we all still are, to be honest.
Yeah, and that's the thing. But it feels like if you ask a question, or if you say something, or if you give the wrong, if you slip up and say a gender that is incorrect, if
people online just go crazy on
they, you know, and it's like you. So for me, it's a space that, one, I'm not really qualified to speak on. It's a space where I think I'm qualified to learn on. So that's the space that I'm in. Let me just learn that, you know, I want to take all of this in and figure this out. Obviously, I'm not into, you know, trying to make the world of, you know, adding to the stresses and stressors that, you know, folks have trying to live their everyday life.
I mean, shit.
I mean, it's kind of like we talked about with, was it Kerry Rhodes? And even with, I think we've had this conversation about a couple of other people before. It really is no, like, your sexuality really is nobody else's business. What you're out there doing with your life, is not the business of your fans. It's not the business of people who buy your music or watch you on TV or watch you play sports. That is between you and your sexual partners. It ain't your family's business. It's nobody's business except who you decide to share that with and who you're having sex with, frankly.
But my thing is, but then that's the thing, if that's the case, and that is the case, than Bobby and others, you know, not to make it right, but you're taking a chance having these type of dalliances
with, oh, absolutely.
People, with people you don't know. Obviously, so people, that means that there's no trust involved in the situation. You're thinking,
and that's
Bobby ain't that young. Bobby's probably in his 30s.
Bobby old enough to know better. But I also think...
This is a deceit type shit.
That's the thing, man. I also think that these folks operate with sex workers because...
In a bit of a denial?
Not necessarily in a bit of a denial, but there is a very clear relationship. There's a very clear give and take here. They are not expected to date, so to speak. So they are not, you know, taking anyone out to dinner.
Yeah,
right?
Like to the movies. Yeah.
You're able to enjoy whatever pleasures you in the privacy of this particular space that you guys choose. And I think that there's a level of expectation of secrecy and in going to a sex worker, right?
Like, well, if that's the case, then you got to pay your tab. Paying for the secrecy.
Yes.
Yeah, if you don't pay your tab, then all bets is off, Bobby. Like you fucked the situation up.
There's an unwritten code of ethics that initially operates with sex workers with paying your bill.
Yeah,
right. Like
that bill buys you the privacy and the silence.
Yes, that paying your tab is the foundation of you. It's the reason that your local soccer dad who spends thousands of dollars at the strip club doesn't get outed in a supermarket.
Yeah, when he runs up on
Bambi. When he runs into Hennessy and Chardonnay.
The white chocolate.
Yeah, and Kit Kat.
They keep it moving because he done paid his bills. You know what
he
saying?
Pays that's his right. bills.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And they not going to blow him up. Because there's an understanding of this relationship, and I want this return person. You know what I'm saying? Like,
you can trust me. So, you know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Come on back, give me your money. So Bobby, good luck to you, man. I mean, you know, again, I'm not saying this based on what he likes or don't like. Like Nas said, I really don't care, but like, pay your bills, bro. That's the only way it's going to work.
And again, when you have, again, the perfect storm of someone like Lil Duval going on a platform like
that. Yeah, I wanted to get his club next anyway.
When you have that, you know, it makes this, everyone's heightened and conscious about this.
Yeah, so Lil Duval went on the Breakfast Club a couple days, I guess, after this Bobby Valentino thing broke. And
I think it was the same day. Yeah.
Might have been. It was very close. You'd say, like the day after or something. It was like massive.
Because they weren't related. Those two instances weren't related.
Yeah.
It just happened at the same time.
Yeah, so Bobby goes on the, Bobby shit. Lil Duval goes on the Breakfast Club, and it's a case of transgender sex workers is brought up, and then Lil Duval makes
it. Well, because Janet Mock had been on the show.
The day before, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think there was, and you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think they were commenting on how good she looked. And, you know, of course the conversation turned into some barbershop shit, you know, via envy, because envy always ends up steering it into, like, these crazy places. And Lil Duval basically said, like, yo, if I was to have sex with a trans worker and the trans worker didn't tell me that they were trans, I would kill him. I'd have to be going to jail for murder. Because it's, and then, you know, the Twitter went crazy on him. And then his response to Twitter was, well, I feel like that's taking my choice away on who I want to sleep with. If you don't tell me what your situation is, then I sleep with you, you took my choice away from me being able to go to another person or deciding to stay here.
There's no way to articulate that without saying
you're gonna kill somebody.
I have to kill them, because people are literally killing trans people. That's the thing, right? The problem with that quote-unquote joke is that people actually are literally killing trans people just for being trans people. And there are some men who are killing trans people because they pushed up on them, didn't take no for an answer, And then once a person was like, hold up, wait, stop, they were so embarrassed, afraid, in fear, whatever, same thing, they killed them. So,
or they had sex with the trans worker and then was so ashamed of themselves.
Yeah, and ashamed of themselves.
So ashamed of themselves that they killed the trans person.
So if Lil Duval had wanted to say, listen, me, myself, personally, I need, and it started this whole conversation of like, when does a trans person tell somebody that they're trans? And I mean, I can't imagine how to navigate that conversation, right? I don't really know like how that works. And I'm not a transsexual, so I can't put myself in those shoes. Because I'll be honest, I don't myself know if I would deal with a transsexual male, but I've never been in the situation, so I can't speak to it. You know what I mean? Like I've literally never been in it, so I don't know. But
do you know anybody who has? Because you always know I have a girlfriend that been in some shit.
No, I actually haven't. I've told you before. I don't have any girlfriends who's fucked with anybody bisexual, to my knowledge. I don't have any girlfriends who would. Okay. And I have friends who have friends who have been like, yeah, my girl fucked with somebody who's bisexual, but none of my friends. You know, and I'm not saying that's a choice. I'm not saying that's a whatever. Yeah, but whatever. So no, I don't, that I'm aware of, I don't even know that I'm aware of. I don't know a transsexual man. I might and don't know.
I realize it. Yeah.
Right. But to my knowledge, I don't know a transsexual man. And to my knowledge, I don't know any woman who's been in a relationship with a transsexual man. And I also don't know if they would tell me because it's not my business. You know what I mean? So it's like,
it ain't really coming up at brunch. You know what I'm saying?
Right. And that's the other thing. Like some transsexuals, they want to be a spokesperson. They want to advocate. They want to do that. And some of them just want to live their lives and like, and blend in and be whatever they're going to be. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah.
And I mean, you know, for me, man, you know, the Lil Duval comments, right, are really, I mean, they're troubling for several reasons. Like, first of all, man, it's, I mean, I understand that comedians absolutely operate as habitual line steppers. Like, that's a part of being a comedian. But
especially Duval.
Yeah, but I also think that he has I don't think he's funny. I don't think he's grown. I don't think his act has grown. In well over 15. I mean, you know, I remember him as Roland Powell. Like, it's literally the same act. It's no different. It's just dangerous to say that, especially considering the climate, because he wouldn't joke about cops killing a black dude. Right? Yeah. Like, he wouldn't make that joke because that joke becomes personal to him. Right? Like that joke becomes, that's a very real thing that's going on. Like, so to make the joke about, I'd kill a trans person. And it's just so extreme, right? Like that's the other thing, right? Like it's so extreme. It's like, even if all of those things had occurred, that like a death sentence was what you thought was okay.
Right.
And to have the peanut gallery of, you know, Ye and Envy and Charlemagne and
laughing
and there's always this sort of, whenever there's these uncomfortable and really dangerous things being said on that platform, it's either radio silence from them
or they're laughing
in a way. Oh, you know, ha ha ha, yeah, you stupid, you bugging.
You crazy.
And
it was the same shit when Kanye said that shit about
Amber.
When Tiger got in early. Yeah, I'm like, what are you, and then they cracking up laughing. I'm like, that's funny that he's fucking a teenager and he's like 27? Like,
because, and look, I'm not here.
You're the Amber shit. Exactly.
I'm not here to make them the moral compass who needs to be guiding, you know, the community, right? Like, I don't listen to them. I can care less about them. But I do think it's really dangerous when you do things like that, man. And it's how I feel about Charlamagne. I mean, I'm good, man. I'm good on all of that shit. Like, they can keep all of that shit.
And, you know, somebody reminded me on Twitter that Lil Duval coined the phrase basic bitch.
Oh, really? That was him?
Yeah, B once started a hashtag, it's not rape if, like, yeah. It's not rape if y'all married. It's not rape if she don't remember. It's not rape if, you know what I mean? So it's like, this is the kind of lowbrow, like Lil Duval is one of the founding fathers of what we call, fatherless Twitter. And it's
little, yeah, him, Corey Holcomb,
yeah,
FaZe
yeah.
on Love,
yeah,
they all but have this very
low hanging fruit,
yes, babe, and it feels, babe. And you know what it feels like? It feels like hatred. Listen, I've listened to lots of comedians, right? And you can tell the difference between a joke and something that is so embedded in a person's DNA.
Yeah.
And that shit comes to them so naturally and with such ease that it's, you know, it's sort of mind blowing, right? Yeah. Like it really is mind blowing to me. Like I've, you know, aside from the fact that I grew up with all sisters, like I just never, I've, my interactions with women have never put me in a space to feel that way about them. Like that's just so weird to me.
Yeah, you got all this venom and this.
Yeah, the venom. They're like, nigga, like.
Can't trust no bitches.
You can't trust these. Damn, yeah, really? It's like.
What?
Where are you going? Like, yeah, who are your friends? You?
Yeah, what's up with your moms? Like, what happened with you and your moms?
And the worst, but the other side is that you hear that and it's like, is this guy, then you question, does he really feel this way or is he trying to appeal to a very specific audience that he knows he's going to get with that? Because guess what?
I think it's a combination of two. Actually.
Because guess what? Everyone who was pissed off at the Breakfast Club, none of those are listeners. Nobody who listens to the Breakfast Club was mad. I assure you, the people who listen to them daily,
thought it was funny.
Them daily.
Yeah, you're right.
They were not upset because that shit was geared directly to that demo.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, so, I mean, you know, I know it's sometimes can be an uncomfortable subject to talk about, you know, just any type of sexuality. I'm not just pointing on transgenders, just whatever, but like this venom and this hatred towards people is like, it's just bananas to me, man. I've never really understood either. I wanted to mention this movie on Netflix called The Incredible Jessica James. It's a movie.
I heard it's great.
Yeah, starring Jessica Williams, who was formerly on The Daily Show. It's her first full film. She's the lead character in the story. It's kind of like and I don't think she did. I think she probably shot it before this stuff came out. But if you look at it, it's a very similar tone to Master of None. There's also some tone of Insecure in it as well. But again, I don't think they were like straight biting. I think that's just kind of like, that's her space of where she lives. She's from LA like Issa. So that's, I'm sure it has something to do with some of the similarities there. And it was a very good, very kind of quirky, interesting movie about this black girl who's 25 in the movie, living in Brooklyn and Bushwick, and trying to kind of figure out, you know, her life and where she's kind of going to go next. And, you know, this is a good movie. I recommend, you know, on a lazy Sunday or something like that, you know, you ain't doing nothing to check it out. It's a good watch. And also want to give,
you know what, while you add it, I just want to mention there's a documentary on Netflix. I called him Morgan. It is
It
is about a jazz musician. I think his name was Lee Morgan. He was basically a prodigy. Dude was playing with Dizzy Gillespie at like 17, 18 years old, had him out on the road. Like he was an absolute prodigy trumpet player and this phenomenal musician. And it really sort of dives into, it's so layered, man. It's so layered and it's so intriguing. It's about an hour and a half. It's really an easy watch.
Okay.
It is super black. It is. I mean, like, there's so many layers of our culture from, you know, the great migration to teen pregnancies to, you know, younger men, older women, younger men. Like, it's so many layers. The drug culture of jazz at that time, the New York City scene. It's really, really interesting. I think particularly you would love that. And I think now you would love that too. But it's a really, really good documentary, man. I definitely recommend it.
Okay. Well, peace to Auntie Aretha Franklin, who done dropped substantial weight. Out here taking pictures with who I thought was Joe, but some guy named Ricky Dillon.
Ricky Dillon is a gospel artist, and we told you that wasn't no goddamn Joe.
I thought it was Joe. Damn it, that's like Joe.
You know, I used to work with Joe, bro. That's why I knew. I was like, bro, that ain't.
I worked with Joe too. Goddamn it, I thought it was Joe. Anyway. Yeah, but Auntie Riri out here counting money in the back with a Nicki Minaj wig on.
Look,
her coins is right. Shit, they gonna short Aretha.
Look,
Aretha been counting money for a long time.
Road manager ain't counting shit. You bring me my money. She got that money. That money went straight to her titties. Let's be clear on that.
After she paid out who she needed to pay out.
It might have gone in her purse, because you know Aretha don't go nowhere without her purse. Aretha goes
nowhere.
On stage with her purse.
She be on stage, yo, nigga. She the was purse on stage under, with the purse and the fur.
The purse literally be under her under the piano. Yeah. Honestly, Aretha went on stage at the fucking Kennedy Center with her purse. Come on, B. Like,
I don't trust these folks back here. I don't know them.
And you know she don't be keeping her money in no bank.
Shit, that's not how you lose your money. Keep it in an old bank.
I'm sorry to cut you off, Jeff, but I meant to do this since the last show, and I know we're out of the TV segment, but I keep meaning to do it. Shout out to Niecy Nash and Claus.
I've been meaning to watch this series. I hear it's great.
It's amazing.
And I hear Carucci is awesome.
TV. It gave me a whole different respect for Carucci. I mean, her character is trifling as hell, but Carucci plays the shit out of that character. It's an amazing show. It's wild. It's outrageous. I think one critic described it as if Breaking Bad was set in a nail salon, and that's kind of accurate. But it's really great. And I'm a huge fan of Niecy. I've been a fan of Niecy since Reno 911. So I'm a huge fan of Niecy, so I just love seeing her in this vehicle. Like, she's so dope.
Yeah.
So, it's been picked up for a second season, and I want to say this season is almost over, but there's been all kinds of, like, twists and turns and craziness happening.
Is it a half hour or hour?
It's an hour. It's an hour? Okay. It's an hour.
Okay.
I think it's an hour. I might be lying. I think it feels like an hour. I think it's an hour.
Okay.
TNT usually airs it with limited, you know, commercial interruptions. So, yeah. I mean, definitely, it's Sunday nights on TNT. Definitely, like, it's worth a binge if you haven't been watching it so far. It's so great.
I'm going to binge. I hear nothing but great things. And that Queen Sugar, like I said, is over tonight until, I guess, probably 18 or, like, late 17. So, I'll have some time on my hands. So I'm definitely going to binge it. I also want to give my quick review of Planet of the Apes, because I saw that over the weekend. It was good. I didn't quite love it as much as the first two, because the apes are like way more like regular like human acting now than they were on the first two.
Well, I heard this is the one where we're supposed to not root for the apes. Like, we're supposed to turn against the apes.
Yeah, but you don't. Because they're basically, it is a lot of what's it called, imagery there. Of like the concentration camps, slavery, you know, it's pretty overt. It ain't like, you know, you can't, there's literally like a scene that's Glory when Denzel gets whipped. It's like literally the same scene. Yeah, it's literally the same scene as when Denzel gets whipped in Glory.
So are they going too far? Is it just too heavy handed?
No. Well, they didn't go too far. It was kind of like, in a weird way, to me, it wasn't subtle enough. It was over the top. And I don't mean like going too far as like they shouldn't have shown this, they shouldn't have shown that, but like it was like pounding you in the head with a sledgehammer. Like, okay, here's the slavery scene. Here's the place that looks just like Auschwitz. You know, like here's the, you know, it's just like a lot of, here's the scene that's kind of like Apocalypse Now. It was a lot of that. Like they were like literally like lifting movie scenes out of other movies and placing all the imagery in the movie. It was a good movie. I'm not saying tell people don't go see it. I just didn't love it quite as much as other people. But go on, check it out for yourself. You want to talk a little bit of, I know you wanted to talk, y'all niggas wanted to talk a little bit, and I'm out before we end up about Black Ink.
Oh, I didn't necessarily want to talk about Black Ink because it's on right now, or it just went off.
It's the same shit we always say.
They on my goddamn nerves. Them niggas is in there breaking
and carrying on and busting up windows and all kind of shit.
They don't know nothing about nothing. They ain't got no home training. They need.
Here's what I will say. Here's something for a lot of people to learn, and I see this quite often in small businesses and in entrepreneurs, like. Stop this family shit, okay? Yeah. When you breed this loyalty family, this is my man, but they're not taking on any of the responsibilities financially or sweat equity wise, stop doing that, okay? Yeah. Because this is what it breeds. It breeds people to feel entitled to your business. It breeds people to feel like it is their responsibility, or they have the ability to go and tell you about how and what you should do.
You should run your shit
that you have to deal with. Like that nigga Van, man, he's the worst kind of nigga.
The worst.
And yes, I'm using ST because worst. It is the worst. He's the worst dude because dude. Who will guilt you into everything. Not one scene. I don't remember one scene where he had with Ryan one-on-one where he thanked him for keeping that spot open for him. For Ryan not hiring somebody when he went to boot camp. And the nigga, and I'm sick of this nigga, and I'm sick of everybody acting like this nigga was in Joliet or married.
Yeah, or Leavenworth.
Okay, nigga.
Yeah, nigga, you was in work camp.
You was in boot camp for a summer, nigga. Okay. You lost some weight and you did some push-ups. Cut the shit, my nigga.
Yeah, nigga went in May and was home in September.
Yeah, like stop it, nigga. You was gone for a summer, nigga. Like you know, so anyway, like dudes like that, he's the worst type of dude like that. And you know what you feel, what I feel when I watch that show? I feel he has such an envy and jealous streak for Ryan. And I don't think it has anything to do with that shop. I think Van is a square. In terms of being around women. Van is never first option. Okay. Van is the dude who you gotta tell him, look, man, this one is mine, so you chill, okay? Because he's the type of dude that won't know. He won't know where his lane is. I'm telling you, I know that nigga.
I can see this. I can totally see this.
That nigga.
Like, y'all loud and shit getting awkward because this nigga just... And then the nigga mad, like, well, fuck all y'all bitches then. Fuck y'all hoes. Don't nobody want y'all right ass nowhere.
Turn the stage table over.
Exactly. So now he mad.
Walk home.
I know that dude, man. I know that dude. He uses the aggression as a part of his swagger because he has none outside of it. You know what I'm saying? Like even Don is crazy aggressive, but you can see he's been around people and women, you know, in particular.
I think Van has a
mean, jealous streak. For Ryan, I even think it's down to the nigga curly hair. Like, I think he just hates that nigga, man.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have a reason to.
He's front like that's his man, but he actually hate him.
Dude who is like, if Ryan does better for himself and doesn't literally grab Van by the arm and say, come right here with me, stand right beside me, then Van's hating.
Yeah. Like the nigga was saying, how y'all hire a receptionist and ain't nobody called my phone.
Wait, this nigga said, you ain't tell me you was making t-shirts. Let's not even get to the receptionist. You ain't tell me you was making t-shirts. My nigga, I ain't tell you I was making t-shirts.
I'm like, first of all, my nigga, if you was actually at work, you would have known. Just fucking called him and hired a new receptionist. Okay? You niggas are coming in here, coming and going as you please. That's what I mean about when you own a business and when you start a business, you have to assert yourself in a position of authority, because trying to assert yourself later, like in my opinion, you have to clean house in a situation like that, because the people who are there do not see you. They see you as an equal. They see you as a peer. They see this as their business. They do not see you in the way that you need
like
to be
seen.
Like, you
always have a meeting with these guys every time you do something.
Yeah.
Like, every time you do something, y'all got to have a big meeting first.
If I want to paint these motherfucking walls black, I'll do it.
Right. Okay. How are you an employee and you mad? I ain't tell y'all I was changing the locks. Nigga, because this is my shit. That's the whole point.
And guess what? Guess what you need to be? Guess what you need to be to change the locks? The person on the fucking lease. Okay.
Right.
You don't just get to change the locks when you're not the person who's the guarantor. Okay. Yep. So until you motherfuckers start cutting it, until you motherfuckers start laying out money for these expenses, until you motherfuckers start running your credit and able to be on lease, like half you niggas ain't got pot nor window. Okay. Yep. You niggas just got checking accounts two years ago.
Might not have one right now. Shit.
Yeah. Niggas is on like
niggas are still going down to the check cashing spot.
I'm fairly certain Charmaine is on some bank's blacklist for bouncing for extreme overdrafts.
For doing some dumb shit.
So exactly. It's like I'm almost positive. Yeah, like these motherfuckers.
I can't bank and Chase no more. They done put my name on some list, and then I went on Bank of America.
Just because my account was overdrawn by $1,000 for
like
9 months.
$7,000. Yeah,
like, they're children, and even going back, and I talked about this last week, but even going back to old girl receptionist who got fired because she was like, "Fuck you, Ryan," and he was like, "Oh fuck me, bitch, you fired." Like, what the fuck is wrong with y'all? Yeah. Like, seriously, what is
everybody
wrong with
way them? Too comfortable? Everybody way too comfortable.
Way too comfortable. And everybody's like, Ryan and Van need to hammer this out. I don't need to hammer a motherfucking thing out. Yeah. Van need to get his shit together.
Exactly. It's my shop. Like, I'm out, you know? Real quick, I mean, to wrap up, I mean, you know, I'm with Bro now. I'm just like, so exhausted with all the politics shit that goes on. Because it's some new shit every day. And it's multiple things per day. Like,
but these past 2 weeks were kind of exceptionally, I said this so many times, and I apologize y'all for saying like so much, but I just sometimes gotta get my thoughts together. But I said this so much during the campaign, but it's so real. If someone wrote this as political fiction, like if this was the House of Cards plot line,
I'd be like, get the fuck out of here.
We would be like, this is the dumbest shit ever. This is crazy. There's no way. Like, it goes so far beyond our comprehension of anything normal or regular or allowable, or like the fact that this is going on in the White House. Like, yo, the Scaramucci shit.
That's just showing their rear view mirror, because they came out today saying that if you don't speak proper English, you can't apply to be a citizen in the United States.
These niggas
is also straight up, and then Trump is trying to pass a policy for the DOJ to look in on how white kids are being discriminated against
going to college. So Jeff Sessions, and we haven't even, I was having this conversation with some friends of mine were asking me if I'd seen any real Black Lives Matter action or commentary lately. And I was like, no, but I can't fault them, because there's just been so much happening since dude got in office that it's almost hard to focus on any one thing. Cause as soon as one thing happens and something else happening, I think they've been working on a local level though. But the shit is so explosive that what people know, but we haven't even really had time to focus on, is how Jeff Sessions has been really quietly just undoing all types of shit. Just, you know, revoking shit, undoing laws, making it easier for the police to do what the fuck they want to do, making it illegal to sue the police, you know, doing this shit, that shit, putting back into place a statute where a part of, I think it's part of the RICO Act or whatever, where they can seize your fucking possessions and your money just if you're even accused of a crime, whether you're convicted or not. You know what I mean? Like, all this type of stuff.
And I believe that's got to also probably got a lot to do with why the Black Lives Matter people marches and stuff like that are they're low right now, because it's right.
In this climate you have arrested. No idea
exactly yeah. Before we get arrested, it's like, okay, we got arrested, we'll get bailed out and we'll regroup. They're now, it's like, yo, they Black Lives Matter marches and Sessions sticks the cops on them and they start arresting people. Like, these cats might end up in jail for 10, 15 years.
Yeah, you have no idea what the fuck might happen.
You don't know what kind of rules and laws he's going to change literally as he arrests you.
The stakes is crazy high. Now you might get arrested. They might go take your mama's house.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, real talk. Yeah,
so who knows what's going on. Yeah, so I get it why you got to be kind of low, because, yo, it's crazy out here. Like,
so, you know, now, to your point, the latest is that the Department of Justice, first of all, the Department of Justice ain't got shit to do with this, but the Department of Justice is going to investigate discrimination against white kids getting into college. What they need to investigate is discrimination against white kids, not because of affirmative action, but because of legacy clauses. Because that's what's keeping qualified white people out of college, not black folks. It's that shit.
It came out today that Jared Kushner's father paid for him to get into paid for him to get into Harvard. Like, he wasn't qualified.
Right. And Trump gave $1 million endowment to Penn, you know, even though granted, like, he may not have needed to for his kids to get in, but it probably helped. I'm pretty sure Ivanka was the only one who had the goddamn grades.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So let's talk about that. I mean, honestly, what is happening is this administration is actively pursuing an agenda to put white men back on top. Period.
Yep. Yep.
Period. Point blank. Yeah. Not even agenda against black people. It's against women. It's against people of color. It's against immigrants. They are doing everything
against
they can.
Against
gays. They're doing everything they can.
And not just white men. They want average fucking... your average Joe,
yes,
who don't know shit from Shinola, they want them to feel empowered. Yes, they want them to feel empowered. And this is that key. So now you're going to absolutely deal with kids who have no business, probably no business being in college, being on a college campus, aren't ready for shit. And they're going to be getting accepted and getting all sorts of grants.
Yep. And then the minorities and the women again, and they're going to basically look at them like, yo, be happy you're here and shut the fuck up.
And you got in because of affirmative action.
Exactly.
And all this other shit. I mean, you know, there's also
this assumption amongst, sorry to cut you off, Sean. There's also this assumption that I'm learning more and more amongst a lot of white people that any black person in school is in school because of affirmative action. Literally any black person in college is there because of affirmative action and is on some kind of free ride.
Yes, that was the other thing. It was sort of fascinating to watch Twitter. This is why I say Twitter is probably the best of the social media platforms, because you get so much information in such a rapid pace and in such real time. But like watching the timeline, and there were multiple people who thought that everyone that they had encountered, and mostly I will say, when I would read the threads, that most of those people who thought that black people were going to school for free were tended to be poor white people.
Mm-hmm. Right.
White people who were not really sort of in the know.
Well, right? Also whose families advanced the agenda of, we can't get up because minorities are getting everything.
Absolutely. And that was what one of the people said, that she actually had a conversation with the guy, because she was saying that he didn't even say it in a malicious way. It was a very matter of fact way. Right. And so she was like, how did you even get this information? And this is like some shit that is perpetuated by parents, by, you know, family members.
Yeah, the community.
the community at large just sort of giving you all of these reasons and justifications as to why, you know, your life is really just not going to be shit.
Yeah. It's holdover. It's holdover from the Southern strategy. Which is exactly what that is. During the Nixon, when Nixon was campaigning, you know, they started feeding lines to these poor Southern, to these poor Southern people that, like, okay, you may be poor, but at least you're not black. So don't do like black people and rely on social programs. Don't ask for Medicaid. Don't ask for welfare. Don't ask for scholarships because you're better than that. And that's why they all mad now. But like, go get your, but like, let's not talk about the fact that you probably couldn't even get into fucking school, you know? And it was just amazing to me because I did go to school in South Carolina. I went to a predominantly white university. It never occurred to me, it was never addressed to me, so I have no idea, but it never occurred to me that people might just assume that, like, I was there on some hookup. Like, that shit never, ever occurred to me, ever.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Well, look, if there's a higher education Negro fund that we supposed to be getting, they need to kick that over, because these
people
Nigga, these payments to Morehouse is really, you know.
Yeah, like, I saw somebody say, yeah, you can get the black, because this one woman was saying, it's the same thread you were in, Sean. This one woman who's mixed was saying that her own mom was like, she was telling her own mother, how much she was struggling to pay for tuition, and her mother was like, you don't get the black scholarship, and the woman was like, the what? And it was like, there's no black scholarship. And this dude chimed in, was like, yes, there is. The black scholarship check box is right there on the FAFSA form. And I wanted to be like, let me call Greg and tell him, because FAFSA for sure told him to get no money for his daughter. You know what I mean? So it's like, apparently there is, you know, it's just, it don't work like that, y'all. And here's how much the hatred against people of color is blinding. Cause the shit don't even make sense. Y'all out one side of your mouth saying we take all the jobs and we're getting all these free rides for education, and out the other side of your mouth calling us uneducated and dumb and unemployed and lazy and trying to be taken care of off the system. So it's like, which one is it, motherfucker? Make up your mind. Like, seriously.
Yeah. So, yo, everybody, I said a few weeks ago, man, keep your heads on a swivel and be prepared, man, because...
Oh, and Scaramucci, you know, is hosting an online... This nigga is funny. Scaramucci is hosting a live stream online event to tell his side of...
Oh, they're gonna murder him.
This is gonna be... I would suggest, just based on the very short time that Scaramucci was in office, that everybody tune in, because this guaranteed to be some jewels in this joint right here. I'm sad because I was really looking forward to what Saturday Night Live was gonna do with Scaramucci in the fall. I was greatly looking forward to that.
Yeah. So that's it, man. We're gonna wrap it up. We will see y'all next week, back in studio, live and in living color. And that's it. We'll see y'all next week.
Later.
Peace.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @PopLifePodcast. Talk to you next week.